This is World Religions Explained. I am your host, Kyle Cottle. Thank you for joining me today. Before we start the podcast, I just want to thank all my listeners for supporting me and listening. And really quick, if you could, by chance, on an Apple podcast, if you're listening on Apple, if you could give me 5 stars, it only takes about 2 seconds, just click the 5 stars, or in any other podcast that you're listening to, my podcasts are on, or any other format. If you could, if there's a way to rate it, if you could, that'd be great. It helps a lot because it helps get this out more and makes it more prominent. With that said, let's go on with the subject of Buddhism. Buddhism is a branch off of Hinduism. If you listen to my Hinduism episode, you will remember that Hinduism is almost more of a philosophy than a religion. Buddhism is even more of a philosophy. One thing that is unique to Buddhism is that they don't find a god to be important in their religion. They don't necessarily reject the idea of an existence of a god, but they do find believing in one to be unnecessary. This is because they are able to find a purpose in their life, whether or not God exists. There are a few reasons why they don't really believe in a god. First, they believe that the gods were originally invented out of fear. This is actually what many modern scientists believe. And they believe that primitive humans didn't understand how the world worked, so things like rain, lightning, earthquakes, etc., all these natural disasters, they're easier to connect to gods rather than believing that they're just some random events that could kill them all. It seemed like a safer bet. Second, there's no evidence of God's existence. So many religions believe that they know how God worked, but somehow none of these religions seem to stay up on top or have any sort of advantage over others. Basically, they all go up and down in their prominence, so nobody has been able to prove that they are the chosen people. Lastly, as I already mentioned, God has no relevance with their purpose. They have been able to find peace without the existence of God. Buddhism has different sacred texts, depending on where Buddhists live and what branch of Buddhism they believe in. Although all the sacred texts are traced back to Buddha himself or his close followers. Originally, the Buddhist teaching were just transmitted orally. That was how many teachings were first transmitted anciently, because they didn't write many things. And they were eventually written down, obviously. And these sacred texts and contents which they contain were agreed upon by councils of Buddhists. Any text that comes from the Buddhist teachings is considered Buddhavacana. That means that came directly from Buddha, from the Buddha. Some scriptures are considered sutras. These are teachings from the Buddha or his close disciples. There are also scriptures referred to as Vinaya. These are rules for monks and nuns, or, you know, those people who commit their whole life to Buddhism and live in a monastery. They live celibate lives. They live just completely enthralled in Buddhism. They don't live normal lives like you and me. And there are also the Abhidhamma. There are further teachings that don't date back to the Buddha, because Buddhists don't believe in God. Scriptures are just words from wise men over the years. They aren't words directly from God. And this is why it's different from many other religions. Many other religions believe that their scriptures are directly from God. They're given to some sort of righteous prophet, some person who is able to speak to God, and they write it down. So these words that many other religions believe are directly from God. Buddhists, they believe that these words in their sacred texts aren't directly from God, but just of people who are very wise, and that their methods have been proven to work. So the background of Buddha is there are different stories and traditions concerning Buddha's early life. We'll kind of go with the standard one. I won't go into all different ways that people believe he grew up and was born, but go with kind of standard version. So the Buddha was known before he turned into the Buddha as Siddhartha Gautama.
He lived around the 5th century BC in what is now Tibet. He was born as royalty. He was a prince. His dad obviously was a king. Before his birth, his mother had a dream in which a six-tusked elephant touched her belly, or in some versions, entered her belly. And with this, some wise men knew that this meant that the child would be born for greatness. He had much wealth and was even married. Obviously, he had much wealth. He was royalty, and many people don't know that before he turned into the Buddha, that he was married. He had a child too, eventually, and his father wanted him to be king one day, but he feared that his son was too sensitive to rule a kingdom. Despite that, at the age of 29, his father showed him the kingdom that he was hoping that his son would one day rule. During this, Siddhartha saw a person who was sick and in pain. He then saw an old person, and he saw death. These things made Siddhartha realize that all of his joy he thought he had would fade away soon. It was depressing. Lastly, he saw a poor man. The poor man seemed happy. This made Siddhartha realize that in order for him to be truly happy, he would need to leave his life of wealth. He asked his father if he could leave, but was forbidden. He ended up sneaking out despite his father's objection. Siddhartha had just had a son. He wanted to hold him once before he left, but decided against it. Somehow, all the guards had fallen asleep so that Siddhartha was able to sneak out without being seen. And it seems pretty, seems like a coincidence, right? Or like it was meant to be. Just somehow, all the guards just fell asleep, right? It's like in a movie. So, with this, he gave up all his lavish clothes, put on some dirty ones. Then he met and studied with some spiritual teachers. Unfortunately, they couldn't satiate his appetite. They did teach him some good things, though. He just went on to join some ascetics afterwards. Ascetics tried to overcome pain through putting themselves through extreme pain and hardships. He became the most determined of the bunch. Those with him assumed that he would be the one to overcome life pain if anyone could, because he was so good at it and he was so determined. He had a 6-year fast where he hardly ate anything other than a few seeds daily. He then realized that his mind was foggy and it brought him further away from his goal. He then tried to find a middle way. This was a way in between self-indulgence and self-deprivation. So he lived a life of self-indulgence in the palace. And then he lived a life of self-deprivation to where he put himself through extreme pain and hardship and realized that neither of those worked. He ended up eating so that he could think more clearly. And then he sat under a fig tree, which is now known as the Bodhi tree or the tree of enlightenment. He stayed and he meditated there. Although all of his desires were there, he was calm. He could still feel his desires. He knew different things that his body wanted, but but he remained calm, and under that tree he reached enlightenment. And this is when he became a Buddha. This means that now he could see the world as it was and he could be at peace with it. And he realized that it was his responsibility to help people find the same peace. He ended up going back and speaking to the ascetics that he was with. They still assumed that he had quit. They thought he quit his quest for enlightenment and that it was too hard, and they were upset with him. But once they saw him, they could feel a difference. And Siddhartha started acquiring a very large following. The interesting thing about this is that he was very progressive. His teaching was taught equally to men and women. He believed that the path to peace was for everyone equally. Because of his following, many other teachers weren't happy with him because their followers ended up following Siddhartha. And he died at the age of 80. So after the Buddha's death, many of his followers got together in what is known as the First Council. They tried to compile the Buddhist teaching from those who had heard him firsthand over the last few decades. And this was their scripture that they first came from, or this is where their scriptures first came from. Many of the Buddhist followers ended up trying to emulate their leader and teach liberation to those that they could reach. There ended up being some differences of opinion among Buddhists. So 6 years after the first council, they had a second council. And this council ended up being the event that officially split Buddhism into different branches. Basically, some people were very strict with Buddhist teachings, while others were more liberal with them. And this happens, again, with all, I always say with all religions. All religions have some people who are very strict teaching, others think they're more guidelines. Now, Buddhism spread throughout Asia in some places. some of these places, they force everyone to practice Buddhism. Again, just like many other religions, it gets too big and the prominent leaders of that area force everyone to be the same religion. So that's why Buddhism is prominent in much of Asia. Fortunately, though, many of the people can now practice or not practice it freely. And this is what Siddhartha or the Buddha would want. So, talk about their beliefs. One thing that many people know about Buddhism is that they practice meditation. This meditation is a means in which Buddhists can fix their problems at the root. So meditation helps the individual to see things more clearly and understands what things are important and which things are not. The byproducts of meditation are things like having better relationship with others, having more patience with others, being able to live a more productive life through focus. So to be clear, the main reason to meditate is to reach enlightenment or nirvana. the good things that come along with the goal are just natural consequences. So remember, meditation is to fix the root of the problem. And when the root of the problem is fixed, all the rest of your life will become better. And we'll get into that real soon. So nirvana, or enlightenment, is a state of mind where suffering is gone and you feel no more sense of self. Is the ultimate goal for Buddhists. Also, like Hinduism, Buddhism believes in reincarnation. Reaching nirvana is a way to get out of this cycle, so keep being reborn again and again. Buddhist belief can be seen in what is called the Four Noble Truths, as well as the Eightfold Path. These things are about suffering and how to get rid of it. The first noble truth is that all existence is suffering, and as you'll see soon, Buddhists are very big into suffering and how to avoid it. That's the whole goal of Buddhism. So this means that we suffer because we center our lives around our experiences, which will always bring suffering. Okay, so anything that we do in life will bring suffering to us because it'll never last. If I say, oh, I want a new car, I will get it and it'll seem really cool. And after a while, I'll say, I want another new car. And I suffer because I want another new car. And it just never ends. I will always suffer because I always want more. So the second noble truth is that the cause of suffering is our desire and craving. Just as I said, you always want something. And because we're always craving, desiring things, we suffer. We blame our suffering on things we can't control, like not having money, being abused, or not being able to catch a break in life with many things like work or relationships. These are things we can't control. and we put our happiness in that and our peace in these things we can't control. And that's not a good thing. So the third noble truth is that getting rid of suffering is only done by getting rid of craving. So bad things will inevitably happen to us, but we need to learn how to deal with what comes in life. Now, the fourth noble truth is to follow the Eightfold Path in order to get rid of suffering. So after we kind of figure out, okay, well, we need to get rid of suffering, we need to change our mindset. Now, the fourth noble truth is this Eightfold Path, and we'll go through that now. the Eightfold Path is separated into three different sections, and we'll kind of go over that as I go over the Eightfold Path. So the first path is right speech. This means not speak badly of others or not lying. Speak kind and uplifting words so that everyone can be uplifted. Second path is right action. Your action should only include things that help others. Nobody should do anything that will hurt others, like stealing, physical or mental harm, lying. Only do things that make others better and make them happy. Third path is right livelihood. This means not to make a means of living or making money by harmful things such as arms dealing, selling alcohol, drugs, killing animals. Anything that you do for your job, for your work, that you're doing most of your life shouldn't be something that at the end of the day creates harm. So things like they're big into not being alcohol distributors because alcohol ruins tons and tons of homes. It kills people, drunk drug driving, does all these things, right? Same as arms dealing, it's wars and all that. So don't be involved in that kind of stuff. So these three paths are what is known as the ethical conduct of the Eightfold Path. As the things you actually more do physically. So the fourth path is right effort. This means that you put an effort to keep a good state of mind, avoid things that will depress you. Fifth path is right mindfulness. This means to be aware of your body, mind, and all your senses. This will allow you to keep yourself in check because you're always aware, right? The sixth path is right concentration. This is done through meditation where you get rid of your lusts, your desires first, and then even your happiness after that. It kind of seems counterintuitive. But through this, you are only left with your self-awareness. And that's what Buddhists are trying to get is self-awareness. That's how you reach this nirvana and this enlightenment. That when you realize, hey, everything is just what it is, and I just live. So the fourth through sixth paths are part of your mental discipline, right? Through the meditation, through understanding your senses. The seventh path is right thought. This means to keep your thoughts on self-detachment, to love all things, and on nonviolence. And if we keep our minds on these things, bad thoughts won't enter our minds, right? If we're always thinking, we love people, we love these things, that if I lose my car, my house, money, that it's all right. If I'm keeping my mind on this, I won't have time to be thinking about all the bad things that are happening in life. The eighth path is right understanding. This means to understand things as they truly are and not just as we perceive them. So the seventh and eighth paths are the wisdom paths. So Buddhists aren't clear on what will happen to you after you reach nirvana and die. Some believe that they may be reborn to help others, while other Buddhists believe that their existence ends and we understand so that their suffering ends. So that can be a salvation to some people, saying, well, we constantly suffer and eventually our suffering ends because we're done. So this coincides with a big belief in Buddhism, and that belief is impermanence. This means that nothing remains the same. Good times, bad times will never last. These things like you're born, you die, things created and destroyed. You must live in the moment and must try to be self-aware and perceive things as they really are. Suffering can only end when you allow yourself to be all right with bad things happening. You'll be free, or you'll feel pain and anguish throughout your life. That's inevitable, but your reaction to them and these things can be internalized, and you can take them as they are. And this is Buddhism, to rid yourself of suffering. And so I want to thank everyone for listening again and again. If you would be so kind to rank my podcast, give it 5 stars. I just know Apple Podcast does it. I'm not sure other podcasts how they do it. Anything you're listening on, again, just ranking. And as I always say, please, if you have any questions, email me. My email's in the link in the description, and you can ask me a question, and I can answer another podcast. And one more thing, I have a link also to my YouTube channel, and I talk about different current events, what's happening to people, life, and why they think certain things. So if you be so kind to visit my YouTube channel and subscribe, that'd be great too. Thank you. I hope you have a good rest of the day.